You're listening to Wheelationships.
Well, we're in week three of our series on guardrails. If you've missed week one, week two, I encourage you to go to the podcast and inquire of God what he wants to teach you through those messages. And I'm not going to be reviewing except to remind you what guardrails are. So we're all starting on the same page. A few of you haven't been here yet thus far. You'll see the definitions at the front of your page there. A guardrail is a system designed to keep vehicles from straying into dangerous or off-limit areas. Safety limits to keep us out of unsafe areas. And the premise is to ask, what would my life look like if I had guardrails in the areas in my life, and particularly those important areas in my life? So then the definition of our life guardrail becomes a personal standard of behavior that becomes a matter of conscience. Now, in the first week, I covered some general areas. Last week, Tim talked about friendships, guardrails in our friendship areas. And this morning, we're going to look at probably the most important area for you to have guardrails in your life. It is the most important area, but interesting or ironically enough, it's also the area where we're met with the most resistance to put those guardrails up in our life. I'm going to cover some things this morning you may not agree with. You may say, well, you know, of course you're going to say that. You're a pastor's wife, you know, like rules apply differently for somebody in ministry and out of ministry. Never quite got that. But anyway, you know, you may not really agree, or they may be things, well, you know, I never really thought of that before. I'm going to have to think about that. Or you may look at some of these things and say, well, that certainly seems, you know, a little bit extreme to me. Or you might find yourself saying, well, it's not important because this only affects me. First off, that's one of the stupidest lies that anybody has ever been told. I started to ask myself, who told you that lie? Well, the father of lies told you that lie. There's nothing in your life that only affects you, no matter how much you try to convince yourself. We deceive ourselves into thinking that, usually in the areas where we don't want to be accountable to anybody for our actions or our attitudes or whatever we might be doing, but it's not true. Someone else is always impacted by what you do. Now, as we look at a broader scope and spectrum of this, moving outside of those in your immediate area, when we look at our society as a whole, this area that we're going to talk about this morning impacts our society like no other area does. It has an impact, and we see that because when we see a lack of guardrails, we see how it impacts our society. It impacts Christian, non-Christian, rich, poor. It impacts in a lot of different areas, because if as a culture we would establish guardrails in these areas, we'd see a drastic change throughout our society. We'd see a change in inner cities. We'd see a change in prisons. We'd see a change in divorce rates. We'd see a change in all kinds of different areas of our society, in health care. It's just innumerable ways that we'd see a change if there were guardrails in this area. So we need to establish standards that trip off our conscience so we stop before we ever cross that line into an area of danger. Okay? Guardrails. So every area of our life where there is desire, we need guardrails. Where there's desire, we need guardrails. That can apply to food, it can apply to money, but this morning, the area that we're talking about where physical intimacy is involved, we need reinforced steel guardrails. That little yellow line's not going to cut it. A simple little guardrail's not going to cut it. We need a tough guardrail in the area of sexual immorality, where physical intimacy is involved. Because most every other area in your life, if you ignore your guardrail or you don't establish your guardrail, for the most part, you can recover from that. If in the area of your finances, you don't have your guardrails established and you have, you know, financial catastrophe, you file for bankruptcy or whatever, over time, with a lot of hard work, you can recover from that. You know, if you've ever heard Dave Ramsey's testimony, you know that to be true. Educationally speaking, if you don't have guardrails and you, you know, fail a class, flunk out of school, you know, have a disaster educationally, you can turn that around. Again, time, hard work, and it down the road becomes nothing more than just a funny story that you tell someone. In the area that we're talking about this morning, it's very different. In the area of sexuality, nobody laughs about our failures and our regrets and our disasters somewhere down the road. You know, you ask the woman who's had an abortion, and she will tell you that never leaves her heart and her mind. It's always there, something that sticks with her. And I've told you the story of Tim's grandmother, who at 18 was unmarried and pregnant and gave that child up for adoption. And at 98 years old, she still grapples with the regret, you know, and the embarrassment of that particular time in her culture that she has to deal with. You talk to a man whose wife has been unfaithful to him, and they've worked through, it never becomes something that they just kind of laugh about somewhere down the road, because this is very, very different. It impacts them, even though they may not always talk about it. Now, our culture wants us to believe that sex is just physical. The designer, the creator, the originator of this gift we call sex tells us it is not just a physical act. And if any area needs a guardrail, it's this one, because of the damage we do, the imprints that are made, the memories that are made follow us throughout our life. So we're going to look at scripture this morning that might seem a bit extreme. It may seem a little exaggerated, especially in light of our culture today. It's not gentle. It's not a hint. It is a command. And here's what it says. 1 Corinthians 6:18, flee from sexual immorality. Familiar passage if you've been in church any length of time in your life, but notice a few things here. God didn't say, I want you to be careful when it comes to sexual immorality. He didn't say, you know, you better watch out. He didn't say, I want you to take preventive measures so you don't get pregnant. You know, you don't contract a venereal disease. You don't end up with an addiction of some sort in a sexual area that you never intended to. You know, he didn't say, I don't want you to, you know, end up with divorce because of a sexual immorality. He says, I want you to flee. Command, very clear. Don't entertain it. Don't see how close you can get to the edge. Don't see how close you can get to that guardrail. Don't make excuses. Flee. See, mankind has a tendency to look at this area this way a lot of times. You want that, flee from sexual immorality. You want your spouse to do that, no question. If you have kids or grandkids, most of the time you're looking at their life, their precious life, and you want them to honor that command in scripture, flee from sexual immorality. In fact, really anybody that you love, care about, whether it's your siblings or your friends, you want that for their life. But all too often for our own life, we kind of think, well, you know, it's a little different for me. I can handle it. You know, I'm not going to, you know, fill in the blank, do whatever. We make excuses. Well, I'm not going to take things too far. You know, well, I would never, you know, whatever the case may be. We know the implications of sexual immorality, so we encourage other people to flee. But when it comes to us, we don't always flee. Sometimes we kind of want to flirt with it just a little bit because we're different. We can handle it. Sometimes we go so far as to redefine sin and God's standard. And the interesting thing is our culture baits us and baits us and baits us to go in that direction of sexual immorality and then throws us under the bus when we do. I think everyone would agree, Christian, non-Christian, there is a certain age that a little girl shouldn't get pregnant. Even the hardest of hearts would be distressed and disturbed when we read an article in the news, and we certainly have, you know, of a 10, 11, 12-year-old girl getting pregnant. I think most people can agree that teenage pregnancy is a problem and it should be avoided. But yet notice how that same culture markets things to those 10, 11, 12-year-old, 13-year-old little girls. Such a mixed message, such a double standard. Well, it's hard not to get Christians and non-Christians alike to agree that somewhere over that line called sexual immorality is something wrong. You know, even if you aren't raised in church and you don't have you know, any kind of Christian inkling to make you feel guilty about anything, there's somewhere over that line where we go, okay, yeah, well, that's wrong. Even I agree that that's inappropriate to behavior. When it comes to marital behavior, okay, I recognize that's inappropriate. When it comes to sexual behavior in singles, most everybody at some point will say, okay, I disagree with that. I remember many, many years ago when Magic Johnson and some of those, and when AIDS was becoming, you know, the big hitting the scene, and they were talking about their sexual life, and a lot of society even said, oh, well, that's too far, that's too much, that's too many. When it comes to pornography, when it comes to any of these areas, even our culture will at some point say, well, that's gross. You know, you've gone too far. And yet, we are bombarded in our society through TVs, through movies, through the music industry, through books and so forth, with images and messages that bait us constantly. Come on, it's not so bad. Step a little further. This is normal. This is what we do in society. This is how we should behave. Baits us to come towards that direction, and then chastises us when we actually do. It's become our entertainment in TV shows, movies. Think about it. When is the last time you saw a love scene in a movie that was between a husband and a wife? It's not seen. Why? Because we don't want to see that. We don't want to flee from the wrong thing. We want to flirt with the wrong thing. Culture's not going to change. It's probably not going to get any better. So we need guardrails. And this isn't going to be really easy this morning. I told Tim when we were walking last night, I said, I don't think this is fair. I had to talk about drinking and all kinds of stuff the first week. He got to talk about friendship last week. And I got to talk about sexual immorality this week. So just buckle your seatbelts, tuck your toes in, because here we go. So you need to decide for yourself, this is as far as I am going to go in this area. And when I even start to get close, remember, this is the whole point of guardrails. When I even start to get close to that line, I'm feeling guilty and I haven't even done anything yet. I have so ingrained the guardrails into my thinking that I'm going to make a big deal about something that is still a good 5-10 yards away. I'm not going to operate on the edge. Now, if you're a Christian, there's even a greater incentive for you to honor God's word. And here's what he says as he goes on here. There's a greater incentive. I'm trying to slow down on that blank there. Sorry about that. Continuing in verse 19. Do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have received from God? You are not your own. You were bought at a price. Therefore, so because of this, I want you to honor God with your body. Temple means your body is holy. Your body is holy. That's what the word says. And holy means it's set apart. God's Spirit lives in you, so your body is really, really special. You should not be careless with how you treat your body. And that can go in a lot of different ways aside from sexual immorality. It can go with food and you know, drugs and different things. But we're talking about this particular thing this morning. God moved in when you invited him to. He took up residence. He purchased you from your debt of sin. So your desires and your appetite should not be dictating your behavior, your thoughts, and your attitudes. You're the steward of your body because your body is now under a new master, and that's God. It's not just a matter of, well, you know, boys will be boys. Well, these aren't realistic expectations in today's day and time. God will never, ever, ever tell you to do something that you are not able to do and that he doesn't expect you to do. You're a human being made in the image of God. You are not an animal who has no self-control. You are a human being. The entire scripture text of this Corinthian passage is completely 100% sexual in its implication and its connotation. And God says, you need to flee. Don't stop and question. You need to flee. So if you're in doubt, if you're trying to figure out, you know, is it, isn't it, you know, the certain situation or circumstance, ask yourself this question. Here's your test. Honor God with your body, period. If it doesn't honor God, then don't do it with your body. if it doesn't honor God with your, if it's dishonoring to God, don't do it. If it's dishonoring to God, don't look at it. If it's dishonoring to God, don't let your mind dwell on it. Now, I was convicted of something other than sexual when I taught myself that part. Don't let your mind dwell on it. You know, you can go to worry, anxiety. We've already talked about those things. Whole different message, but just a little side thought. If it's not honoring to God, then don't dwell on it. We can't change what God says in order to suit what we want or what we think is right. And a lot of times we try to do that in our society. Had a friend just this week on Facebook posted an article that was explaining her denomination, which is Presbyterian, and their laws that they just recently passed within their denomination to make it completely permissible for their ministers within the Presbyterian faith to perform gay marriages. And her statement on the article was, "I'm so proud of my denomination." You know, we can't change God's truth because we think it needs to be different, because we want it to say something else, because we don't agree with it. It doesn't suit us. And I got to thinking, I said, you know, if we've established our home and we're raising our kids, we have certain standards, we have certain behavior, expectations that we expect them to honor and to obey. Now, how would I feel if Jim came along and said, "Well, you know, Tim and Trudy, you know, that's not the way we raised our kids," or "I don't think you should be raising them that way. I think it needs to be different. So I'm changing the rules of your home, but I'm going to endorse your name on it." And that's what we do with God. I'm going to change what God says, but I'm going to put some kind of religious stamp of approval on it and make it sound like God's okay with it. Hey.
Yeah, right.
Every day, our goal should be, I'm going to live my life today so that I am honoring God. And in order to be successful doing that, you are going to have guardrails in your life. In the area of sexual immorality, it's a decision you have to make. And by not making a decision, you have already made a decision. Am I going to honor God with my body? Now, in just a minute, I'm going to be going over some very specific guardrails. We got a list of guardrails for married people. We got a list of guardrails for single people, because you're one or the other no matter how you got there. So as Tim mentioned before, this is a series that we're doing from Andy Stanley. I am taking his guardrail list verbatim because I liked it. It was wise. It was good. And as you hear these, you may not agree with some of them. There may be some of them that you look at and you think, you know, well, that just kind of seems stupid. You know, I don't see the point in that. What I want you to do is ask yourself a couple of questions as we go through these. The first thing is, what guardrails do you want to be in place for the person you are currently married to or will someday be married to? Your, what I call your someday spouse. What kind of guardrails do you want them to have? What kind of guardrails do you want to have your children to have, or maybe your grandchildren? And if those guardrails that you want to see in place in their lives are different from what the guardrails are that are currently in your life, in other words, there's a double standard going on there, then you need to ask yourself why. Why is that? Why is it important for them and not for me? Second thing I want you to think about, I want you to just pretend for a minute. Just imagine for a minute you hear these guardrails and you just reject them. You know, you don't want to put them in your life. You know, you don't think they're necessary. You don't see any reason to. Maybe it seems just a little too extreme, a little too far-fetched. Because, you know, it's hard. It is hard to do. And after all, I'm never going to have that particular moral failure. You know, it's never going to happen, you tell yourself. Remember what we said in week one? Nobody plans to fail in any area. But if you don't plan not to, you're leaving yourself open for that very failure. So imagine that 2, 3, 4 years down the road, the thing that you thought would never happen happened. Could be an unwanted pregnancy, it could be an addiction, it could be a divorce, it could be an affair, it could be, you know, emails that you've been exchanging with somebody and your spouse has found them, text messages you never wanted anybody to see has been discovered, and there is a drama that is about to implode in your life, do you think at that moment you would pray? Do you think if from that very pit you would cry out, God, help me? You know, I think even a non-Christian would go, oh my God. You know, that's a start. It's something. I think you would pray. And God just may, at that moment, bring this series to your remembrance. Why? Because today, He desperately wants to rescue you from that imaginary scenario 2, 3, 4 years down the road. Because life is so much easier to deal with on this side of the guardrail than it is on that side of the guardrail. Ask anybody who, I mean, most everybody has had some kind of regret, something they wish they had not done. Easier to deal with here. One of the things I've learned about sin through the years is God always warns us. We are never caught in the midst of a failure that is of our own design, and we can say, oops, you know, I just didn't know. We always know. This is your opportunity. So as we get through these specifics, ponder them, and I make a promise to you as we go through the guardrails. If you establish these guardrails, you'll never regret it. If you don't, you might. But you'll never regret establishing guardrails. Now, He did not make up this list on a whim. These come out of years and years of ministry, of counseling, of emails and letters, walking people through valleys of crisis in their life is where He came up with these. So here we go. Married people, number one, don't travel alone with members of the opposite sex. Don't drive in a car. Don't fly in an airplane. It should be standard operating procedure for people serious about maintaining a margin of morality in a very dangerous culture that we live in. Now, that may sound extreme. Understand, there may be instances that come up. It should never be the norm. But if I'm driving down Bayshore and John Cruise's car is broken down and he's walking down the road in the heat and he can't find anybody to get him, I'm not going to ride by and roll down my window and go, sorry, John, guardrail. Yeah. You're on your own, buddy. But what you can do is pick up John Cruise from the side of the road and pick up your cell phone and say, hey, Tim, just letting you know, got John in the car. I'm taking him over to, you know, the church so he can get Tammy's car, you know, blah, 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 blah.
If any of the rest of them pick up John, don't call me.
He said, if anybody picks up John, don't call him. He's not going to know how to help. Yeah, everybody's going to be calling Tim. Hey, Tim, I got so-and-so in the car. No. All right, so you got that. Don't travel alone. Number two, don't eat alone with members of the opposite sex. No, none of this, hey, let's go grab a cup of coffee. You know, you want to do lunch? You know, why don't we do lunch? Oh, man, we've been working so hard today and it's late. Why don't we go grab some dinner? I found it interesting that Andy Stanley said of all the many, 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 many couples that he has counseled through the tragedy of an affair, every single one of them, except for one, started right there. Let's go grab some coffee. You know, why don't we do lunch? Just decide I won't eat out with alone with members of the opposite sex. Number three, don't hire a cute member of the opposite sex just because you want to help them. If you want to help someone, I got to ask you, why aren't you hiring somebody ugly? Listen, I came up with three couples right off the top of my head where this was the scenario into their affair. Well, I'm just trying to help them. They need my help right now. They might need help. They don't need you. Your spouse might have even said, you know, may have heard this in your home. I'm not comfortable with, you know, it could be a person, it could be a situation. I'm really not comfortable with that. You might have even rebuffed him and gone, well, what's the matter? You don't trust me? You know, are you just being suspicious? Listen, God is using your spouse to caution you, to rescue you, to warn you, and you need to listen to that. Don't do it just to help that person. Number four, don't confide in or counsel members of the opposite sex. A lot of those coffee dates start right there. Well, I just need somebody to talk to. You know, you listen to me so good. Nobody understands me like you do. We have some very dear friends of ours that started with this scenario. You know, she was the acquaintance, he was the friend, but she was married and she was having some attraction, some interests cropping up in her life for a man that was not her husband. So she came to our friend for counsel. Big first mistake, don't go to a member of the opposite sex for counsel. And within a not too long period of time, she was pregnant with his baby. Now, we have two families that are devastated, as well as a church, because they were both on staff at the same church. Don't confide in or counsel. Don't look to somebody of the opposite sex for your counsel. Well, they need me. I'm trying to just help them. They need help. I agree. They don't need you, and you don't need them. Well, it just sounds so mean. I don't sound very compassionate if I tell them I won't do that. Listen, the kindest, wisest, most compassionate thing you can do for your marriage and for the future of that other person is to flee. Don't confide in them. It's the best thing you can do. When your emotional world and their emotional world become intertwined, it is a very dangerous scenario because everyone wants intimacy. It's not about sex. Almost across the board, it's not about sex. It begins with that hunger for intimacy, that closeness. It may lead to sex, but it's usually that's not where it starts. It begins with the emotional, and you're not going to be able to navigate that wisely if you don't have guardrails. Number five, this is the toughest. I think it would be. When you feel your heart or your desire drifting towards a specific person, obviously that is not your spouse, you need to tell someone. If you're a man and you're thinking, well, you know, there's this lady in the office and gosh, I notice her every time she comes in the room. You know, I just enjoy when we get to talk and spend just a little bit of time together. You need to find, if you're a man, find a man. If you're a woman, find a woman. You need to find somebody that you can trust to be accountable to, and you need to tell them the struggle that you're experiencing. It's going to be hard. It's probably going to be a little bit embarrassing. But you will not regret it, because anytime you try to hide something, you're going to be taking a few little bit more baby steps toward that line that you do not want to cross. And then the last thing for married couples, your spouse needs to know where your guardrails are so they can call you on it. And they need to be comfortable with your guardrails. There may have already been a time in your marriage where your spouse has said, you know, I'm not really comfortable with this. Could be a person, could be a situation. You might rebuff them like we talked about earlier. But remember, when listen to that, because God is trying to use your spouse to show you something you may not have eyes to see because of the emotion that you're experiencing at that moment. So have a guardrail conversation with your spouse. And the beauty of guardrails, when we establish them, when we make them a matter of our conscience, you're going to feel guilty about something that is not even a sin. You're going to have that forewarning way ahead of time. It'll keep you from that regret. Now I'm going to stop for just a second. Are there any comments, any questions before I go on to the single people list? Yes, sir. Thank you. And thanks to Andy Stanley. All right. Okay, I'm going to go on. Single people. Number one, gouge your eyes out with a spoon. That really was his number one. And I thought it was funny, so I was leaving it in here. Caught me off guard. All right, here's your real number one. It may feel like what it needs to be, but here's your real number one. Apply the married people's guidelines in your own relationships with married people. In other words, if you are single, do not travel alone with a married person of the opposite sex. If you are single, do not dine. Go out for coffee alone with a married person that is of the opposite sex. Don't counsel with them. You know, you need to apply the same standards that you want your spouse to apply, or your someday spouse is what I should say. The same standard you would want your someday spouse to apply. If you don't want your someday husband to be traveling alone with a cute unmarried gal, then you don't do it now while you're single. If you don't want your wife to go out and have lunch with a male coworker that's married, then you don't do it as well. Don't confide in them. Don't counsel them. You know, girls can sometimes especially get so suckered into this and go, well, I'm just trying to help him. You know, he's having trouble with his wife. And, you know, Lord, I just pray you give me wisdom so I have the right thing to say. Sister, God is not going to honor that prayer because you are not honoring God. You're being foolish, and you're stepping towards a direction you should have no business stepping towards. Number two, no sleepovers. Sleepovers were fine when you were 6 and 7, but when you are a single adult, there should be no reason whatsoever for your boyfriend or girlfriend to spend the night alone with you in your apartment. Well, you know, it was just so late, and, you know, I hated for them to get on the road, or you know, well, he was on the sofa, I was in the bedroom. You know, it wasn't a sin. We didn't do anything wrong. You're right, it wasn't a sin, but the point of guardrails is to keep you from stepping and inching and justifying and gradually migrating your way towards a dangerous area that you have no business being in. Now, the third item is one that Andy Stanley said he is the most thanked for. He said whenever he does these conferences and stuff like that, and he'll have a single person come up to him, you know, with their now spouse in tow, and thank him for this one principle right here. If you are coming out of a social life where dating equals sex, you know, odds are pretty good. If I'm out on a date, I'm going to be having sex. Maybe not the first date, but eventually the two kind of go hand in hand for you. You need to take a relationship break. You need to take a relationship break. And what that means is zero dating for 1 year. Sounds like a lot, but I'm telling you, this is the one that he is the most thankful for. Why? Why do you need that year? You need that year for God to renew your mind. You need that time for God to renew your heart, to reset yourself. And a lot of people are going to ignore that advice, but I'm telling you, it is the greatest gift that you can give to your future marriage, to your future spouse, and most of all, to yourself. God can do an awful lot in your life that will allow you to establish healthy boundaries in the area of intimacy when you've honored him in that area. With guardrails like this in your life, you're not going to look back 5 years from now with regret, with a memory you wish you could just, you know, erase and it disappear. Wishing you hadn't given yourself to someone that wasn't your spouse and never will be your spouse. You're not going to find yourself living with regret and hurts and memories, because one of the most important things that fuels intimacy in marriage is exclusivity. Exclusivity. That old song, "I only have eyes for you," sure carries a lot of weight in the context of a marriage, and it all begins with guardrails. You cannot let your peer group or our culture or our society to determine something so important in your life. Don't be fooled into thinking that it's not important. Sin always, always matters to God. The question is God going to matter to you? And that'll show in the types of guardrails you have in your life. So God says, I want you to flee sexual immorality. He's telling you, I'm residing in you. Your body is incredibly special to me. It is holy, and I want you to take care of it. I want you to honor me with your body, and in return, I'm going to honor you in your relationships. It's that important. I'll honor you and your relationships if you honor me and what I'm commanding you to do and how I've asked you to conduct your relationships. Now, if you'll notice there on the end of your handout, there's some more little food for thought for you to ponder over during the week. Any questions, any comments? I actually finished a couple of minutes early, which is like a shocker for me. Anything you want to add? Yeah, Laura. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it was funny as I was studying this week. I remembered a lady when Tim and I were first married. We lived in Ocala, and of course we're young, 20s, you know, kind of thing. And he was involved in Bible quiz, as he still is today. Bible quiz was a big part. And there was a mom of a couple of the teens that wanted to work with Bible quiz, and she's kind of an abrasive personality anyway, so kind of understand that. And out of the blue, I was walking down the aisle at church, and out of the blue, she stopped me and says, "Why aren't you working with your husband in Bible quiz?" You know, I'm like, woo, you know. And the point was, she says, "Well, I would like to work with Bible quiz, but I don't think it's proper for me to work alone with your husband." Now, as a young 20-year-old, I was doing all I can not to snicker, because now looking back as a married woman, I'm going, yay, lady, you had guardrails. And I didn't recognize that at the time. But all I could think of was, I'm standing in front of, I don't even know if she was middle-aged. She's kind of one of them. I don't mean to be cruel, but she's kind of one of those ladies that just always looked old, you know, even when she wasn't old. you know, you've seen them before. And I just remember, I'm sorry.
You better stop there.
See why I have to stick with my notes, but truly, really, you've seen them. And I went home and told my husband that story, and he just went, but you know, I'm telling you, when I did this, I remembered her, and I thought, you know, you might not have called them guardrails, but you know, her marriage was healthier for it. She was cautious about things while they were still 5, 10, many, many yards away. And that's the point of guardrails. And that's what I hope you take away today. Think about these things. If you had something that you kind of went, yeah, I don't know, ask yourself why and pray about the possibilities of applying these to your life. All right?
Yep.
Have a good week.